Hi, United Kingdom. It's Shawn Mendes, and I'm partnering with Tommy Hilfiger to make style more sustainable with our Classics Reborn collab.
The collection reimagines timeless style more sustainably through recycling innovations, more sustainable materials, and circular design practices. And this is just the beginning. This is how classics are reborn. Tommy X Shawn, Classics Reborn.
Click the banner below to explore.
Fans, welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian. With me, as always, is Chris. And we are in the midst of the Mets' 10-game road trip. The weekend series in Los Angeles was a split, which I think everybody was pretty happy with. The 3-game series in San Diego has been a 1-2 job, which I can say, thankfully, it's a West Coast trip, so I didn't have to watch most of those games. The Mets almost lost a couple players to injury. We'll get to all of that in just a minute. But first, let's just talk sort of overall about the 7 games on the West Coast so far. The weekend series with the Dodgers looked like what everyone expected it to be, which is, you know, a battle of the two best teams in the National League, or at least two of the best teams in the National League, a possible NLDS preview. And, you know, while the Mets did not hit in the first 2 games, they were fully on board with the bats in the last 2. That Sunday game was one of the most exciting and riveting end of a game that we've had this season. Just a fun back and forth, and you know, games like that just make this team a lot of fun. And like has happened a couple of times for the Mets, they carried that energy into the next game, but then the 2 games after that have been, well, you know, Not so pretty. So how are you feeling about the West Coast swing so far? Are you at all nervous that they dropped 2 or 3? Or I guess, you know, not nervous. Are you at all concerned that they dropped 2 or 3 to the Padres? In any sense? I'm not either, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, not in isolation. Coming into the road trip, I think everybody was, intimidated. But it's just been a nice reminder that this team can hang with those teams. I know they've had a couple games where they didn't score a run. That's not been the norm for them, but these things can happen over the course of a 162-game season. And at least they're happening against good teams. They're still 3-4. I think bouncing back with those 2 wins in LA after losing the first 2 was a really good sign for this team. And I know they're not the only team in this road trip with injuries. They, looking ahead slightly for a second, they might miss Mike Trout for a game or 2 or 3. Significant absence from the Angels lineup if that happens. But again, the Mets are doing all of what they're doing right now without Max Scherzer and without Jacob deGrom, and at least last night without Pete Alonso and Starlin Marte in the lineup. I don't know that those 2 would have driven in a combined 13 runs.
Fair enough.
But they're not 0-7. Of course, you'd wish that they were 7-0. I know other teams in the NL East have gotten hot, but the nice thing about what they did earlier in the season was that they entered June with a pretty good cushion in the division. It's far from a lock to last the rest of the season, but they were positioned to absorb a losing road trip, and they still have the opportunity to finish this as a winning road trip. So at the end of each game, it's a win or it's a loss. They won just as dominantly, we're going to make that a word, in the first game in San Diego as they lost the 2nd and 3rd. So I know the net out of that series was a little bit of a blow to the run differential, but it's not like they're not capable, right?
And the run differential is still 3rd best in baseball.
Right. And that could be 2nd again soon. It could be 1st if the Yankees ever cool off, which I mean, just a few days ago, both New York teams had the best records in their respective leagues, and all teams are going to go through rough patches. And if this is the rough patch, a slightly under 500 seven-game stretch against two other contenders, that's totally fine. That would be a great low point of the season. So
yeah, especially when you realize that, and again, we know that other teams have injuries also. I'm not downplaying that. But the Mets, you know, went into this West Coast road trip without three of their starting pitchers. They lost two of their bats in the second game in San Diego. So, you know, there are some injury issues here at play, and they've had some lackluster performances from Chris Bassitt, which we'll get to in a minute. Like you said, even if this road trip winds up a 4-6 road trip, that's okay. Teams go through bad streaks like this, you know, they happen. And to call a 4-6 road trip a bad streak is also a little bit unfair to the concept of bad streaks. You know, it is unfortunate that the Braves have won 7 games in a row. It is unfortunate that the Phillies have won 6 games in a row. The Mets still have a 7-game lead. They are still 17 games over 500. This is not a time to panic. If this continues for a month, we can talk about it. But I think that getting McGill back this weekend is going to help a little bit. I think that Alonso and Marte not going on the IL is a good thing until inevitably one of them goes on the IL in 2 weeks or a week and a half, which is what the Mets do. They don't put someone on the IL, and then they play a game or two and then get hurt again. So hopefully that doesn't happen, but that seems like the Mets mojo. That sort of stuff happens. But yeah, I'm not particularly worried. You know, I think that the most worrisome part of the road trip to me so far has been Chris Bassitt's performance. I was looking at his Baseball Reference, and you got to give me a minute here to pull this up. But you know, the last couple of games have not been kind to him. So he went, this does not have last night's game in here yet, but he lost the game he pitched on June 3rd against the Dodgers. He won the game he pitched on May 29th against the Phillies, but lost the game against the Giants that he started on May 24th. So he's in a little bit of a slump right now. He has given up, 8 earned runs against the Giants, only 2 against the Dodgers. Three against the Dodgers, rather, but then a boatload last night as well. So, you know, obviously pitchers go through dead arm periods. Pitchers have little streaks. When do you start to get truly worried about Bassitt? Is it 3 bad starts in a row? We're at 2 right now. Is it 3 in a row that you get worried?
Right now, looking at the game log, it's more 3 of the last 4 starts have been bad. Before that, everything was fine. There were a couple starts that weren't amazing, but I almost want to say if and when, hopefully, the Mets play against a West Coast team in the playoffs, maybe just pitch Bassitt in Queens.
Yeah, that
works. I don't know, and it's bizarre for a guy who
played his whole career on the West Coast until this point.
Right, but his West Coast ERA right now is very high without doing math in my head early in the morning. But the San Francisco, LA, and San Diego trio of starts has been bad.
The LA start really wasn't all that bad. He went 6 innings, gave up 3 earned runs, struck out 8. And you have 2 home runs, which is not great, but that wasn't a terrible start.
Yeah, no. And if that one didn't have the other two around it, you know, we wouldn't, or I wouldn't be lumping it in with it. It's not ideal, but I'm just looking to make sure that that this is backed up by what I think I've seen. But I think his velocity has been steady. Yeah, if anything, he's been throwing harder over the last 6 or 7 starts than he did in his first few with the Mets. So there's nothing here. There hasn't been any appearance of injury. There hasn't been a velocity drop. Anything like that. I think it's just a reminder that baseball can do this to anybody. And even Mike Trout, second time mentioning him on the podcast, but even Mike Trout had a slump last week, which is something that is very rarely happened to him. But it can happen to anybody, and it's weird. Gary mentioned it during the broadcast last night, referred to sort of like a slumping pitcher. It's not something we usually say,
right,
but it feels accurate. And his next time out should be against the Brewers, right? Yeah, he won't. It's just one day off. So he's not gonna face the Angels, but he'll get the Brewers at home.
Well, there are 2 days off. There's day off today and day off Monday.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I meant just before.
Yeah.
Before those games with the Angels.
Yes, yeah.
And it's only a 3-game series. Really, I'm not a fan of 4-game series in the regular season. I like the odd number. I like the way that you can either win or lose that series. Totally happy with the split with the Dodgers, given that was the schedule. But I don't know. There's always those series feel weird to me in a regular season. But the way the schedule is, there are 4- and 5-game series this year. But yeah, I think there's no reason to think that Bassett will continue to get shelled. And he seems like a guy who has a decent perspective on all of this and somebody who's pretty dedicated and has a lot of clubhouse respect. You know, we've mentioned earlier in the season, players talking about him and how he commands the room like Scherzer or DeGrom, which is saying a lot. So you know he's good and you just kind of give it time and let it play out. And I think he'll be fine. If something changes with either, you know, if the home runs continue to be a major issue that or get worse, or if we learn there's some minor nagging injury or the fastball goes, you know, down into the lower 90s or lower than that, okay, that I'm starting to get concerned. But I think he'll correct his course. And you know, these few starts, maybe he won't finish with a 2-point-something ERA for the year, but there's no reason that he can't improve on his 4-and-change that he's at right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, like always with baseball, the randomness of baseball and the way the schedule plays out, these 3 starts spread over 3 months would be no cause for concern whatsoever. But because they're clumped in a relatively close proximity, it seems like it's more problematic. So until this becomes an everyday, every start problem, you know, until he starts looking like any number of Mets pitchers from the mid-2000s or the mid-aughts, I think the mid-teens rather, you know, I think we can still have confidence in Bassett. We should mention that it appears that Tyler McGill is going to start a game this weekend. It's been a minute since McGill pitched. Do you have any particular thoughts on Trevor Williams versus David Peterson remaining in the rotation when he comes back?
Oh, good question. That's something I had really considered. But I think it would be Peterson who I'd leave in, which is not something I would have expected to say. They've both done an admirable job, you know?
Yeah.
But I think Williams has just shown, not that he's like the best multi-inning reliever, but of the two, he's the guy who I'm a little more comfortable with in that role. And I don't know, maybe I'm being deceived a little bit just by straight up ERA, but it's Peterson's been a little bit better by that.
Well, I think that there's a bit of what's what I'm looking for. Williams' first start or first game back was really, really rough, and so his ERA suffered because of that. Whereas I feel like in terms of in-game action, they've been pretty equal. So far, they've both been perfectly cromulent starters for the Mets, but I do think you're right. I think that if you're talking about sending one of them to the bullpen, I think it makes sense for that to be Williams, as he has shown a better proclivity for being a relief pitcher. However, if you're sending one of them to AAA, I think I would send Peterson down.
Yeah, and that is an option. I mean, pun intended with him, but and it sucks. It's like, oh, hey man, you got a 2.97 ERA on the season, but we need you to be that sixth starter. So enjoy Syracuse for a bit, and then we'll have you back.
I believe Williams is out of options now, right?
Yeah, he is. The other argument here, too, it sucks when you look at it and you're like, okay, you've been so successful at certain things that you're going to get demoted to the bullpen if the pitcher happens to look at it that way. And I think right. A lot of them do, unless they make that full-time switch. But Williams has been excellent at limiting walks this year. And for whatever reason, I think we all hate when a reliever comes in and starts walking guys. When I look at the overall picture, the fact that Peterson has somewhat of a walk issue should probably concern me more than it does. But I'd have a slight preference for the guy with the lower walk rate and a little bit better track record of relieving being the one who goes to the pen. And it's a good problem to have.
Absolutely.
It's nice that we're not like DFA Williams and send Peterson back. Let McGill pitch twice every five times, every five games.
This is going to be an issue when DeGrom and Scherzer get back, because it looks like their Mets are going to be with six starting pitchers, not counting Peterson and Williams. And I guess you send McGill down at that point? Maybe?
Yeah, or just let him throw some relief innings and option a reliever. But then I guess it gets more philosophical about are they trying to sort of balance his innings load over the course of a season? It doesn't matter if he's fully stretched out or not. How do you get a guy in often enough that he could jump right back into the rotation? But I don't know. I feel like he's been too good to – And that might sound unfair to the other pitchers. I mean, McGill did see his ERA take a bit of a bump before he got hurt. But, I don't know. I would prefer not to send him down, if possible.
Yeah. Like we said, these are good problems to have. The Mets have a lot of pitching right now, and for the most part, it's been pretty good. I also wouldn't be surprised if just the way that baseball works, these things get worked out and somebody gets hurt. And so it's not an issue in terms of sending someone down or putting someone to the bullpen, because there may just be an instance of somebody just getting, just getting hurt, or even someone just needing a rest and getting a phantom IL spot for a couple of days, something like that. These things just tend to happen in baseball. Speaking of injuries, we had two somewhat scares on Tuesday night's game with the Padres. Starling Marte tried to steal second base, got thrown out in the process, and hurt his left leg in the process. His quad was stiff, so he played the next half inning, but then came out of the game. And then I believe it was the half inning after that, Pete Alonso was hit in the right hand. Looked like a pretty nasty hit by pitch, and there was thought that he might have to miss some time. But aside from sitting out that game and the next game, it appears that he is going to stay off the IL too. No bruises, no breaks, just a lot of swelling. No breaks, no fractures, just a lot of swelling in his hand. So that's good. Watching that game, I thought one or both of them was going to hit the IL. Did you agree?
Yes. Marte definitely looked like he would to me. We know those leg injuries are a little bit tough. So we've seen quads and hamstrings and all that many times over the years. So a player getting up, sort of banging on his quad a little bit, trying to stretch it out, trying to get out in the field and play, and then realizing it's just not working, that I would still be surprised with that one if it doesn't end in an IL stint. Mm-hmm. Alonso felt more 50-50 in the moment where, as somebody who was a Jeff Bagwell fan in addition to having Mets fandom as a kid, Bagwell had multiple instances where he got hit by pitches on the hand and then wound up wearing that big pad on it afterwards to try to prevent more broken bones in his hand from it. You may remember some of the sounds that it made in the home run derby.
Yes.
In the 90s. But despite that history of seeing it happen to Bagwell, it just seemed a little more, you just don't know. You could watch a replay and go like, oh, wow, that looked terrible, but it just happened to not break a guy's bones, or it did. So when they said x-rays were negative the night of, that was encouraging. And I understand wanting to take a deeper look to really make sure. But that's dodging a big bullet. And that it's Dom Smith has hit respectably since he was sent down to Syracuse. JD Davis is not a first baseman in the time we've seen, especially trying to track down foul pop-ups. Not his best skill as a baseball player. They can cover for Marte a little bit better, I think, despite that still having some flaws in it. But they can still cover that a little bit better than any prolonged absence from Alonso, who is just driving in runs and hitting home runs and just been awesome. Maybe the Mets' most valuable position player so far, or at least up there with Lindor, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that definitely rings true for me. I think if you lose Alonso for a couple of weeks, that severely impacts the lineup in not just in his contributions, but just in the respect that he brings in the middle of the lineup. Whereas Marte, I think, is a little bit more of a wild card in terms of what you're going to get out of him day in, day out from an offensive perspective. And, you know, I know that Khalil Lee apparently is on his way, or rather joined the team last night so that they could have an extra outfield option, which of course wound up biting them in the ass because they were down a reliever because of Bassett's performance not going well. They could have used the extra reliever. But, you know, again, these things happen to teams and it's okay. I'm just glad that there hasn't been – that neither of those guys have landed on the IL yet, although I'm with you. I think that Marte maybe does wind up there eventually. So going into this series with the Angels are looking quite bad right now. They fired Joe Maddon, the second major superstar manager fired in the last couple of weeks. We had your friend of mine, Joe Girardi, fired from the Phillies. And and now the Angels lost Joe Maddon and they're in the middle of a 14-game losing streak. So the Mets should be able to go in and feast on the Angels. At least that's the hope, right? You hope that the team can go in there and just figure out just how to put up a couple of more wins on the ledger before heading back into New York for the homestand. It looks like the infamous TBD is pitching Friday against McGill. And, is Ohtani lined up to miss them?
I believe he pitched either Tuesday or Wednesday night, should take him out of.
Yeah, so like I said, tomorrow there is just TBD going. Let's see who is scheduled for Saturday.
I mean, I guess if you pitch Tuesday
TBD,
night.
TBD on Saturday as well. And let's see who's going Sunday. Look at that, TBD. So who knows who the Angels are throwing out there?
Yeah.
We could get Ohtani on Sunday.
Yeah, it's possible. They do still tend to give a little more time between starts. Are they still? I have not paid that close attention to the Angels other than their absolute downward spiral here. But I don't know if they're still rolling with a six-man rotation on a regular basis. But there's definitely more days between Ohtani starts than you would typically see.
Yeah,
for a starting pitcher. So
did you see the bit of Angels news from last night that is the perfect segue into our music recommendations?
I don't think I did.
So they were trying to get their mojo going, right? And so they decided to do something that I can only describe as cursed, which is that they went with all Nickelback walk-up songs.
Yes. Didn't work.
No, it didn't work. And who would have thought it possibly could have? That's like saying, I have diabetes. Let me eat a pound of sugar for dinner. There's no reason to do that.
Yeah.
bad. Just bad. So, yeah, that's sort of the state of the Mets right now. Anything else you want to talk about before we get to our music picks?
No. I think despite my last thought on the upcoming series, 2 weeks ago, everybody's looking at the schedule, afraid of all three teams that the Mets are facing on this road trip. I know what the Angels have done. I know they may be without Trout for another couple of days, but I don't want to hear that, oh, they only beat the Angels now. It feels like they should, and if they do, just like when they beat up on the Nationals, they should just get credit for, hey, they caught a team while they were struggling, and they took advantage of it. That's what good teams do. That's all. So I don't want to hear, oh, well, they won the road trip, but they had a losing record against the Padres and Dodgers. That's all that matters. Like, nope, you don't get to be afraid of the whole road trip and then change that after the fact. So that's my last thought on that.
A fine thought it is, my friend. A fine thought it is. What is your music recommendation for this week?
So inspired by, we saw Michael Jorgensen do a solo improvised piano set early at Solid Sound, and most of it didn't do it, but it was a great set, but most of it didn't have this link, except one song, maybe two or three songs before the end of that set, there was just a stretch of it where it reminded me a little bit of Brad Meldow, which is definitely a compliment.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
So Meldow, I've seen several times over the years in a couple different formats. I'm trying to remember. I don't think I've ever actually seen him solo live, but he did put out a record live in Tokyo back in 2004. My goodness. But
I remember the record. Yeah.
It's really good. It starts with Nick Drake cover Things Behind the Sun. It covers Thelonious Monk, obviously. Legendary ends with another Nick Drake cover and Riverman, but the real highlight of it all, and I know this sounds weird to say something else is a highlight when there's a Thelonious Monk song on a record, but there's a 19 and a half minute cover of Paranoid Android by Radiohead, and it is so good. It's just like to take that and do what he did with it alone on one instrument. It's just absolutely phenomenal. It inspired by a different artist, but certainly a record that is worth listening to. And I've always thought this record has sort of versatility, despite it sounding the same every time you play it, of course. It can work for like quieter, relaxed, or if you blast it, it can be an energizing record. Not a lot of records can kind of do that, you know. Yeah. Like if you put on Metallica low, it's just gonna be like, well, turn it up. What are you doing? But you could fall asleep to this record in a good way, or you could have it energize you in the morning. And I think that is a kind of cool thing about it. So Brad Meldow live in Tokyo,
an excellent pick. I'm also going on the jazz route today. So there was a record that came out last month by a band called The Smile, which is Johnny Greenwood and Tom York of Radiohead, along with a drummer that I never heard of from a band called Sons of Kemet. And so I liked The Smile record, but I wanted to dig into Sons of Kemet. It's a jazz band with two drummers, a tuba player, and a saxophone player. That's the full lineup. And so I happened to just look them up, and there was a record that came out in 2018 called Your Queen is a Reptile. I saw some good words written about it, so I thought, let me check that out. And it blew me away. It's really cool. I was trying to describe sort of the one of the things I love about a two-drummer band, which is that you can both keep and break the rhythm at the same time. Where there's this sort of steady backbeat, but there's also somebody who's able to fuck with that backbeat a little bit, and just it adds this rhythmic complexity. I don't want every band to be a two drummer band. Like, I think, for instance, AC/DC would be ruined with the addition of a second drummer. but you know, when that works, I think it's a really, really cool thing. And using the tuba as the bass in this just adds a very different sound. I mean, obviously, tuba has been used as a bass instrument in jazz for decades, but not in sort of the, I've never heard it in this format of jazz before, which is a little bit more free and not as I think of tuba in like Dixieland and big band jazz, whereas this feels very much very modern and very fluid, and just a really, really fantastic record. They're actually breaking up this summer, but they're playing a free show in Central Park at the end of July. So if you want to hang out, come find me there. And yeah, Your Queen Is a Reptile by Sons of Kemet. I can't recommend it highly enough. And that will do it for this week's Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. Thank you so much for listening. We truly, truly appreciate it. Go to AmazingAvenue.com for all your Mets needs, podcasts, news, analysis, etc. We had a piece up this week by Michael Drago about possible all-stars for the Mets. It seems like that's far away. It's not. We are about a month out from the all-star break, which seems crazy, but that's what happens. Amazing Avenue is also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. This show can be found on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts. Wherever you get podcasts, we're there. Please rate, review, and subscribe to it. Chris is on Twitter at Chris McShane. I am on Twitter at Brian Needs a Nap. And until next time, let's go Mets.